Hey everybody, welcome to the fifth episode now of the AV Paranormal Podcast. Now, I haven't been keeping up with the episodes because I just started this job and I've just been, every time I get home I just pass out and I haven't really, you know, had the time to sit down and actually make an episode. Now, I know before I had mentioned we were going to talk about demonology and cleansings and everything, but actually in this episode I want to do something different. I want to talk about the St. Francis Dam that's out here on San Francisco Road. Now, I actually went out there. I didn't actually go down into the dam part because it was, you know, getting dark and the camera died on me. And I didn't want to get eaten by rattlesnakes or bears or anything like that. So, you know, I just kind of went, scoped out the entrance and figured out a way so this way we can get in and everything and just saw the whole area, because I would like to go and hold, like, do a whole investigation thing, but that's probably going to have to be during the day and just progress into nighttime, because I don't really want to be exploring out there at night without knowing, you know, how it looks during the day. So in this episode, we're going to talk about the St. Francis Dam, and I'm going to also, on the YouTube page, there's going to be a video of me driving up to, you know, San Francisco Road and doing, like the beginning of bouquet and all those things, and then at the end of the video it's going to show the best entrance that I found to get into the dam. So, you know, be sure to check that out and everything. But other than that, you know, in this episode really just going to focus on talking about the history of the dam, talking about, you know, what caused the disaster, all the deaths, and I'm going to be showing, you know, pictures and everything, but that's only for the YouTube side. And then want to talk about planning up some upcoming events that we're going to have, and, you know, get ready for the next episode of the podcast, which will focus on demonology and cleansings and everything, because I know there's a lot of people in the group that are having issues with spirits and stuff and always asking, you know, how do I cleanse my house? Do I need to go get a priest? Is there things I can do by myself? Or, you know, what's just the whole basic, you know, guideline and, you know, routine or whatever that you can use, and like kind of a DIY of cleansing basically is what we're going to do. So, you know, sit back, you know, enjoy, and I hope you like this one as much as you guys like the other ones. Okay, so St. Francis Dam is located on San Francisco Road, and basically it's next to that big DWP power plant that's over there. And I guess, you know, back they when they built it, there was a big old river and everything, and it was for the aqueducts that Mulholland was building and stuff. So there was a lot of water and vegetation and everything at that time period, not like today where, you know, we have drought and your outside front yard looks like Mad Max Apocalypse Wasteland. So the dam was all built out of concrete, and it had no steel inside of it, unlike, you know, many of the other dams, because they, at that time, well, let me backtrack. So it was built by Mulholland, because he was basically building everything. You know, he went and did the aqueduct, stole all the water from the Owens River Valley or whatever up there, and he's been, you know, piping it all down and everything. So, being a businessman, he wanted to save as much money as possible, so this way he can maximize the most on his profits. So, when he built the St. Francis Dam, he used the materials that were just, like, considered legal, the bare minimum of everything. So, the purpose of the dam was to act like a regulating storage reservoir for the city of L.A. Now, it's located in the Sierra Pelona Mountains, and it's about like 40 miles or so northwest of downtown LA. And, you know, the current city is Santa Clarita, obviously. So, the dam was built between 1924 and 1926 by the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power. But at that time, it was called the Bureau of Water Works and Supply. And, of course, William Mulholland was the general manager and the chief engineer of, you know, the whole department and everything. So Mulholland actually got his start as a ditch digger for the original company that was hired by the city of Los Angeles to handle the whole water supply and everything from the LA River. Now, during his time as a ditch digger and everything, he slowly worked his way up but also began teaching himself mathematics and hydraulics, geology and engineering and everything. And then by the end of, you know, working as a ditch digger, he ended up becoming the superintendent in 1886 of the water company. Now, in 1902, the city of L.A. ended its contract with the company that Mulholland was working for as a ditch digger, and then began taking control of the water supply itself and created its own internal water department that was called the Bureau of Water Works and Supply, which Mulholland was continued as a superintendent and then named himself as this chief engineer. Now, in his position, he worked designing and constructing the Los Angeles Aqueduct, and which, you know, took the water from Owens Valley and funneled it all the way to LA. Now, he surveyed a lot of areas and everything, and it was during the process of building the aqueduct is when he started considering the sections of San Francisco Canyon as potential dam sites. He felt that there would be a reservoir of sufficient size to provide water for LA for an extended period in the event of a drought, ironically. But, or, you know, if we got the aqueduct fell apart or something during an earthquake or anything like that. And then he wanted to also use it as a hydroelectric power plant, you know, sites and everything that can kind of work all together. So, you know, he really looked at how the canyon narrowed and how it went downstream and opened wide and all these different things. So this way it can, you know, really played well into his plans. So in 1922, they began surveying and clearing and began constructing the dam. Now, during that time, pretty much the area around there was all farmers and everything. So these farmers would get really pissed off that, you know, they're building this dam here and they're clearing all this farmland and everything. So they would frequently sabotage the dam and sabotage, you know, the construction equipment, everything like that. Now, during this time, this was actually going to be the second all concrete dam that was going to be designed by the Bureau of Water Works and Supply. Now, the first one, which is pretty much identical in size and shape to the St. Francis Dam, is actually the Mulholland Dam, which actually construction began 1 year earlier than the St. Francis Dam. And he didn't really make any changes between the design of that dam and the St. Francis one. But he did make some minor ones to suit the whole location and everything, because he didn't really take into account the whole geology of the whole canyon and all the different rocks and minerals that made up the area. But, you know, despite all of that, he didn't really want to, you know, go in there and actually spend the money and build it the correct way, but instead focus on how can we build it a cheap way, you know. So in the construction, they use arch style gravity kind of a building, I guess, building construction, whatever. So there wasn't really that much known on how the whole arch system really worked in all of this. So they were kind of doing like guesstimations, and they were frequently altering plans and adding different things and taking things away. So by 1925, the reservoir had a capacity of 38,000 acre feet, and then the height was 185 feet above the stream bed level. So I guess in our terms, it would be 1,835 feet above sea level, and, you know, that's how tall this thing was. Now, given how tall it was and everything, they actually had to go and construct a 588-foot long wide dike along the ridge that was adjacent, you know, to the western abutment in order to contain the enlarged reservoir and everything. So you can already tell from right now that they're, you know, worried about containing all the water and everything, and they're concerned, and they're basically doing like these patch jobs to try to strengthen the actual dam itself without, you know, taking different known damming techniques or anything and trying to do it, you know, a much more efficient way instead of doing it the Mulholland way. So in March of 1926, they began filling the reservoir up with water and everything. Now, almost immediately when they started filling it up, there was a whole bunch of contraction cracks and seepage began, and then there was a long about 58 foot wide crack that was on the west side as well as the east side of the dam face. Now, Mulholland ordered everybody, you know, go patch that up and everything, and they weren't very successful in patching it up because nobody really knew, like, what was going to happen with this whole dam made out of pure concrete and everything. So what they ended up doing was laying pipes down to collect all the water that was leaking out, and then they just piped it further downstream to the assistant chief engineer's house that was down there, you know, the dam keeper or whatever. And he basically used it for domestic purposes and everything. So you can already see from there too, like, there's already problems immediately within completion of the dam and everything. So, you know, this all just spells disaster, and eventually that's what's going to happen, right? Now, in February, they began seeing more and more cracks started coming out, right? And it began leaking at the base of the dam, and began leaking on the sides, and then all the water that kept seeping out was getting trapped inside of, you know, the hillside and everything, which began loosening up all the soil and stuff. And, you know, they kept calling Mulholland, hey, come over and inspect this. And every time he would do, he was like, okay, just put some grout on here and compact the dirt, blah, 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 and let's just do patch jobs and everything will be okay. Well, the last time he was out there before the whole disaster happens, he noticed that the whole hillside was eroding away, and, you know, this spelled, like, you know, landslide, all these things are about to happen, and he saw that the foundation itself was eroding away. So, you know, he's already knows this thing's about to go, but again, still doesn't really do anything. Now, on March 12th, 1928, the dam finally fails completely. Now, there's no surviving eyewitnesses of everything, but the general accepted time of the failure is 11:57 p.m. Now, during this time, the workers at Powerhouse Station 1, which was a hydroelectric plant and everything, they notice all the voltage in their lines just completely drop, and then the transformers explode and everything like that, and then that cuts off power that was going to the Antelope Valley power line. So this was kind of the first indication that something had happened, and a lot of people who investigated this and wrote books about it and everything, they all, you know, concluded that when they reported this happening is actually the point where the whole hillside gave way and we had the big landslide that, you know, leads with the failure of the dam. Now, it's known that there was about like 5 people that passed the dam within an hour before the failure, but none of them reported any conditions out of the ordinary. Now, there was a motorcyclist named Ace Hopewell, I believe, and he was a carpenter at the Powerhouse Number 1, and he was actually riding his motorcycle 10 minutes before midnight, and in his testimony at the coroner's, on the coroner's report and everything, he said that he had ridden up the canyon and had passed Powerhouse Number 2, and the dam without seeing anything that was alarming or out of the ordinary, you know, just the typical leaks and all that stuff, so everybody was pretty accustomed to it. And then he said about 1.5 miles or so past the dam, he heard the sound of like rocks falling down and everything, and he figured, oh my god, you know, I'm in a landslide and everything. So he jumps off his motorcycle and he checks everything around him and makes sure he's okay and everything, and then, you know, he just assumed, oh, it was just some rocks falling down or whatever. And I guess landslides in this area were pretty common back then, so he didn't really think anything of it and kind of continued on his way. But really, it's like everybody believes he was the last person to actually see the dam intact, and that all those noises and everything that he heard was the dam failing and, you know, it collapsing and everything and all the water coming down and causing this big flood that's about to happen right now. So with that, the flood, the height of the flood was actually 140 feet high. Now, when this collapse happened, everything that was in the reservoir just came spewing out. So you're talking about like 12.4 billion gallons of water coming, rushing downstream, taking everything out in its way. You know, there's pieces of the whole dam going along with it, and some of these pieces were like 10,000 tons each, and they found pieces of the original dam about 3/4 of a mile way downstream. So everybody that was there is completely obliterated by this giant like tsunami wave. And if the wave didn't kill you, then you know, you either drowned or you got taken out by the debris. So there was really like nothing you can do. It was over, you know. Like all the water was going about like 18 miles per hour, and you know, powerhouse number 2 is completely taken out. That was about 64 people died right there in that powerhouse. And then there's some towns and everything. What happened? The flood traveled south down the canyon and began emptying into the Santa Clara riverbed. It began overflowing over there, flooded parts of today is Valencia, Newhall, and you know, Edison loses power. All these basic things happen. You know, Ventura, Oxnard go without power. Six Flags is all flooded. Of course, Six Flags didn't exist yet, but it was basically the whole thing was flooded over there. So Edison actually sent out workers to go find out what happened, and those people basically got caught in the whole flood and everything, and 84 of them died. So, you know, you can see right here, it's like people are just dying left and right here, and they have no idea of anything that's going on. So there's a lot of speculation, like how many people are dead, how many people are missing. There's reports of like anywhere from 250 up to 700 people dead. Then there's other reports that say 100 dead, you know, 500 missing, 700 missing, all these different newspaper articles, which you'll be able to see them in the YouTube video and everything. But basically, this is like the worst disaster in California history up to this time, you know, with the exception of Northridge Dam and all that stuff. But I mean, not Northridge Dam, Northridge Quake. But I don't even think that many people died in the Northridge Quake. So all these things start happening. All these people are dead. There's no power or nothing, right? So with all of that in there, all that death, I mean, it would stand to reason that the area is pretty haunted, at least, or has some kind of paranormal activity, right? Now, doing some research online and everything, I'm trying to find different ghost hunting people and stuff like that that have actually gone out to the area and explored it and see if anybody got any EVPs. Now, the only actual thing that I can find that was actually worth reading comes from seeksghosts.blogspot.com, and this is in Tuesday, November 13th of 2012. Now, I'll put the links and everything in the description for the podcast and in the YouTube description and everything, but I'm going to read this to you, and you know, we'll discuss it after that. So the title is The Ghosts of the St. Francis Dam Disaster. Moments after midnight on March 12, 1928, the St. Francis Dam broke near Santa Clarita, California. 12.5 billion gallons of water, initially 150 feet high, crashed down the narrow San Francisco Canyon, killing and demolishing everything in its path. It wiped out the Tesoro site, then it demolished the popular Harry Carey Ranch and trading posts and much of Saugus. It joined the Santa Clara River at Castaic Junction, demolished Fillmore, Santa Paula, Santa Coy, before it reached the Pacific Ocean near Ventura. It was over in just 5.5 hours. This was the second worst disaster in California history. The first was the San Francisco earthquake and fire of 1906, The gram in here is terrible, actually. So it's not that I can't read, it's just trying to read this is kind of brutal. So when the St. Francis Dam broke, approximately 500 men, women, and children were killed. Now, I know that contradicts what I just said earlier, but nobody really knows how many people were killed, because, you know, it's in a rural area and everything, and there wasn't really, like, there was a census back then, but you know, kind of had people that were living off in farmlands and, you know, being like hillbilly and all that stuff. So you can't really say how accurate those were. Now, let me continue on here. One body discovered afterwards had washed all the way south to San Diego, and in the 1950s, skeletons were still being found. Today, huge chunks of concrete from this dam still litter the site. Some state they stand like gravestones over the dead. Despite the magnitude of the disasters, it was not widely publicized at the time or even today. Now, of course, at that time, like 1928, you're getting close to depression and, you know, there's a lot of world events going on. So, you know, the disaster, the St. Francis Dam disaster and everything isn't really priority, but there are a lot of, you know, newspaper articles that still have it as the cover page and everything like that. So, anyways, he goes on to write, "The cause of why this dam broke is still in question. No one is certain what caused the St. Francis Dam collapse. Possibilities range from unstable ground to the concrete used and an underlying fault." The St. Francis Dam actually passes over a fault line that isn't active, but, you know, they say everything's inactive and then it becomes active again. So, you know, over here, I mean, they're just trying to cover their butts here, but really it comes down to just, you know, subpar building materials and not really caring about anything. So, let me continue on here. A retired civil engineer, Clarence N. Freeman, who lives in Fillmore, was quoted in the LA Times article of saying, "In the case of the St. Francis Dam, William Mulholland, chief engineer of the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power, surrounded by a flawed organization with a siege mentality, used poor judgment, improper geological consultation, faulty engineering design, and development of the dam to the maximum storage capacity possible without proper consideration of the consequences." So, even in here, you know, from an LA Times article and everything, everybody's pretty much blaming Mulholland. Because, I mean, he does have a bad reputation for doing things. So, I guess that comes with the territory. One family, the Ruises, who lived close by the dam, all perished. This included their four children, aged 8 to 30. This family was buried in a small, peaceful cemetery on a shady hill that overlooks the San Francisco Creek bed. Now, I've been trying to find where the cemetery was, and I haven't been too successful in that. I mean, so if anybody knows where the cemetery is at, please let me know, because that'd be actually a pretty cool place to go check out. You know, not just for the paranormal aspect, but also for the historical side. So, yeah, if you know anything about that, please let me know. This cemetery has over 100 graves where other victims of this tragedy rest. It is said when photos are taken of this area, they often do not turn out. So, you know, that's kind of typical stuff, I guess. A lot of people always say that about, you know, cemeteries and everything, that, oh, you take a picture of this, it's going to be all blurry, blah, blah, blah. And I think, you know, in my own opinion, I think there is some truth to that sometimes. But, you know, a lot of times it's these cameras, like, they have so many settings and everything, and if you don't really know what you're doing, then of course it's going to screw up, you know? So I'd be more inclined to use, like, the old school Polaroid cameras, or even, like, you know, the film cameras, but even then, you can still, there's still too many things that can happen, like the developing process, you know, you're still out of focus, all this thing. So, you know, I always take those kind of deals with a grain of salt, I guess. Now, one young boy with blonde hair was found wearing a cowboy outfit. He was not identified for several years. A Western film star of the time, Tom Mix, helped with his burial. It was later found that he was the young son of a family who had been camping in the area. His whole family was killed when the dam broke. Since this disaster, many people who are residents in the surrounding area claim that they have encountered ghosts. One specific documented account I find very compelling involves the Ponton family. This family moved into the area in 1976 and bought land near where the dam broke. Their property included the Ruiz Cemetery, as well as, you know, various parts of the dam site. One night, a cast iron horse trough that could only be moved with a crane was found moved several feet and completely turned around. There were no footprints or drag marks in the sand that surrounded it. Most unusual was the trough was full of water, and afterwards this water seemed undisturbed. The weight of this trough ruled out the possibility that it was moved as a joke. Now, the wife states years later that she did not believe in ghosts, but what happened with this trough still puzzled her. But I have to admit, the horse trough was strange. That's the one thing we've never been able to explain. That was the quote from the wife. Another unusual incident occurred when the wife and her husband, Andrew, moved an old house from Sand Canyon onto their property. The wife had just painted an inside door jamb when a child's fresh handprint appeared on the paint. The family did not have any small children at the time this happened. They did have a grown daughter who often heard the sounds of a crying baby in the area around the creek bed. Now, the film star Harry Carey Sr. told another really interesting story connected to the disaster. As mentioned above, he had a ranch in the San Francisco Canyon area. Before the disaster, he employed a group of Navajo men and women who manned an Indian village on his ranch. I guess that was kind of, well, he says, I guess this was for the tourist trade, so I don't know. Days before the dam broke, Carey was visiting New York, received a phone call from the village medicine man. This mystic informed Carey that he dreamed of an impending and epic disaster. He then asked Carey permission to temporarily move his people off the ranch and back to their home on the reservation in Arizona. Carey agreed, and the Navajos packed up and left 2 days before the dam broke. Now, each year on the anniversary of this tragedy, the Santa Clarita Historical Society offers a lecture, and then they do tours of the site and everything. So, you know, in the aftermath of the dam collapsing and everything, William Mulholland, he ends up taking full responsibility for the disaster and then resigns shortly after that. So, you know, here you got a whole bunch of different people. You got the Navajo Indians, you know, saying they're having some kind of premonition vision of some disaster befalling the area, so they take off. Then you got people who buy land in the area and everything, and they have child handprints showing up in paint. They have horse troughs mysteriously moving on their own without the water dumping out or anything like that. So, you know, that there has to be some kind of, you know, paranormal entities that live there. I mean, these are all people that had their lives, you know, abruptly cut short. You know, not even, like, many of them aren't even identified people. You know, like, in the case with the little boy, they barely found out, like, oh, he was camping with his family and everything. So he was probably playing, like, Cowboys and Indians or something at the time. And then, boom, just like that, completely vanished, you know, existence ending. So, yeah, I mean, I would believe that there has to be something there. Now, I know there's been some people in the group that have actually went out there or something and, you know, report creepy feelings and everything like that. And, you know, I'll admit, yeah, when I was driving to it and everything, there is a little bit of a kind of creepy feeling. And you'll see, if you watch the video, that the entrance that used to be the old San Francisco Road, it's all blocked off now. But it's overgrown with trees and everything, and it's like, it looks super creepy in there. Now, that's not someplace I would go by myself down in there. One, because I don't want to get eaten by the wildlife and get bit by a rattlesnake and then have to try to drive myself in there while my leg falls off or something. But, and it is super creepy out there. You don't know what's out there or anything. And, you know, what if you see, have an encounter and you're there by yourself and it's like, you know, at least if there's somebody else there, they can be like, oh, dude, like, you know, they can corroborate your story and, you know, give you some credibility or something, at least, so this way you're not just seeing things by yourself and everybody's like, oh, you know, it's just your mind playing tricks on you and everything like that. But, you know, it'd be a great place to go out and do some investigating, you know, with the spirit box, try to get some EVPs, you know, take some photos, get some EMF readings and all that stuff. So that'd be something that would be really great to check out and do for the very near future. Now, I want to talk about some upcoming events that I want to plan out. Okay, so let me pull up this calendar really quick. Okay, so looking at this calendar here, Some of the areas that I want to go check out is the Joshua Hills, and I want to check out the Lake Elsinore, or the Elsinore area's Naval Academy, which I'm going to email the owner and see if we can, you know, get in there without having to do some, you know, born identity deal to get in there. And I would also like to do the haunted camping grounds, and where is that at Camp Comfort. So let me see here. Now, I wanted to do something on the 10th, but I'm going to be doing the Exorcist midnight showing down at the Beverly Cinema in LA. So if anybody wants to go to that, you know, feel free to post up and I'll let you know about that. So I'm thinking maybe for the 17th, we could check out Joshua Hills or so. And then maybe the 24th, we can do, or I'm going to be trying to do Camp Comfort. And then we also have two houses that we're supposed to investigate. One of them is from a family friend down in Orange County, which he has some pictures that he was showing me. And basically his house, I believe, is from the Victorian era or so. And there's like this old lady in there that had died or whatever. And in every photo, you can see this kind of ghostly lady wearing Victorian era clothes. But it's like kind of shadowy and everything. So, you know, that sounds like it's pretty legit. Like, he was telling me the beds are moving by themselves, doors are closing, and it's like super scary. So, you know, he's barely credible, because he's very like, even when he was telling the story and everything, he was like, ooh, didn't really want to say anything. But yeah, and then we have another house that we're supposed to investigate, and as soon as we get all that, the both houses worked out, the details and everything, then we'll make event pages, and you know, we'll get a select few to come with us, and we'll go out there and everything, and do pretty much going to be like an all night kind of deal out there. So yeah, so look for, you know, the event pages that I'm going to be making, and if you're interested in going, post up in there. You know, maybe we can get some people to carpool together, you know, just pitch in a couple bucks for gas. You know, don't be a freeloader. But yeah, so we're gonna have a couple of things, good things coming out. And I did want to do something for the 31st, like a Halloween special kind of hunting deal, but I don't think this time we're gonna get around to that. Maybe we could do something the 30th is possible, but yeah, not for the 31st is gonna happen. So yeah, so you know, if you guys do anything, any hunting, or you know, you go out to, you know, Knott's Berry Farm or Halloween Horror Nights or anything like that, feel free, you know, post up some pictures and everything and let us know how it is and stuff, and maybe somebody will get motivated and go, or you never know. So yeah, so continue sharing everything, guys. It's great group. Look for the next episode. We're only going to be talking about demonology and cleansing and everything, and I will have that out for you guys by Monday. Okay, I'm going to stop trying to, you know, get some sleep, and instead I'm going to try to get back into the groove of things and have these podcasts out regularly for you. Also, remember, for the video and everything and the photos, check out the YouTube page and everything, and I'll post up the links for that under all the podcast links and stuff. So yeah, be sure, you know, comment, subscribe, like, all that stuff. It's good things. All right, till next time, guys.